Hello, this is the third Moonafest Destiny podcast. Moonafest Destiny is a novel I wrote in 1991, subtitle The Rough and Ready Balloon Invasion of the Lunar Peninsula of Texas. My name is Peter Gelman. Moonafest Destiny is available on Amazon's Kindle for 99 cents around the world with illustrations. In this episode, I will read Chapter 2, Provocation by a Fool. "The moon or death," the mob shouted in New Orleans. Proudly, we marched to huzzas of "All the Moon" down Canal Street and up the balloon ramps. "Home by Christmas," we promised each other, seasick in the swinging gondolas. "I never been so bored," we complained, month after month, sweaty and sick, in the neat tent rows of Anaxagoras crater. "Dang it, am I thirsty," we complained on the hot trek southward through forsaken mesquite and cactus lunar desolation. Bivouacked on the Mare Frigoris. Every day we cursed our missing pickets. "Gol darn, but another Mick done swum the river." I tried to remember the thrill of freedom I felt on the long walk to the base on the shores of the Chesapeake Bay. It was only a few months previous, but I couldn't get that thrill back. In Camp Greenhorn, I drilled and marched and drilled, and in fact learned more than I wanted to know about killing. There was a scandal we had to keep quiet about when one fellow from my company died. But I learned how to stab scarecrows and march regular and clean my buttons. But now, looking raggedy-patched as a scarecrow, I learned the true duty of an angry Saxon army, to wield shovel angrily. So we regulars assaulted the dirt. I was thinking about old Hernani. It had been a few weeks since I had last seen him. That was back at Anaxagoras Crater, or Annex Agonies, as we called it. The night before we got set to march south, I dreamed of my old rope swing. There I was swinging away over the creek, free as a buccaneer, when the rope stopped swinging properly. It was kind of shaky. I felt a hand shaking me. The owner of the hand coughed. It was Six Fingers. "What do you want?" I demanded. "Shh," he told me, looking guilty. I sat up, wide awake. "You got a girl somewheres? Did you hear what happened to Hernani?" I let out my breath. "What?" He motioned with his head for me to follow him. We snuck through the camp. To dodge a sentry, we tiptoed between our officers' big tents to the dragoons' camp. If we got caught wandering, we were as like as not to get hogtied and gagged for a day. Beside his master's tent, old Socrates lifted his head from his blanket. I gave him a wink. He winked back and dropped his head. Over by the south edge of the dragoon camp, behind the horses, I saw somebody standing on a barrel. I guessed who it was. "Heck, Hernani," I laughed when we got close. "What are you standing on a barrel for in the middle of the night?" Hernani looked at me. As he turned, I saw the sign hanging around his neck. "Habitual drunk." "Oh," I said with a friendly chuckle. "Shoot, where'd you find enough fire water to get drunk on? You should have shared it with me." Hernani didn't answer. So I asked Six Fingers, "How long does he have to stand like that?" Six Fingers said, "All night. If he falls off, he gets the HD brand with the hot iron right on his cheek." "Branded like a common criminal?" I said angrily. "How's he going to sleep standing on a barrel like the Colossus of Rhodes?" "Looks like he's sort of sleeping standing up like a horse." "He was pretty stiff up there." Where's the guard?" "No guard, machine." Six Fingers pointed to the side of the barrel where it read, "Lieutenant Fitzroy's patented sobriety machine." "I heard about it," Six Fingers explained. "It's got a bell inside and a weight on one side, so if Hernani gets off, the barrel tips over and the bell clangs. He's trying to sell his machine to the army." "Why do you have to stand there?" I asked Hernani. Hernani still didn't answer. "Yesterday, he got in an argument with Lieutenant Fitzroy about the P of T. Hernani said Texas ended at the Nueces River, and that the moon was the moon's. Fitzroy said that any soldier who didn't think we must fulfill the destiny given us by Providence was drunk." "I see," I said. "Say, Hernani, you look mighty tired. Why don't you come down and rest a spell? We'll look out for you. Jack, you get up on the barrel in case the sentries look this way," said Six Fingers. I shrugged and took Hernani's hand and pulled him off the barrel. Six Fingers held it steady so the bell wouldn't clang. Then I took up his sign and jumped on the barrel. "Get him some water," I whispered. "Right." Six Fingers scurried off for a gourd. Hernani sat with his back against the barrel. He dropped quickly asleep. I thought about what it'd be like to get branded HD on my cheek. What would the ladies think? I'd tell them it stood for Handsome Devil, but they'd probably think it meant Hell's Danged. After a while, Hernani said, "I am ashamed." "Oh, heck," I assured him, "there ain't nothing wrong with being drunk, even a habitual drunk, if you're a soldier, I mean. Swear to me you will keep a secret." "I swear." "No, you must swear by the blood of Thomas Jefferson." "What?" "Well, all right, if you say so. I swear by poor Tom Jefferson's blood." "What's going on, Hernani? You got a girl somewheres?" "I cannot fight these moon people." "Why not? You sick?" "I won't tell." "I am a Catholic." "So?" He looked at me and said, "Jack, these moon people are Catholics." "So? I hear they're kind of Catholic savages." "Protestants are savages." "I am not Protestant. I am Catholic, you fool." "So?" "Shh. So nothing. You are a good fellow. You think about it, eh?" I took that to mean he wanted me to keep my mouth shut about him being one of those Catholics. Six Fingers came back with some water. As Hernani drank, Six Fingers and I took the bell out of the barrel and buried it in the dirt. Hernani asked if I wouldn't mind standing on the barrel for a half hour or so in case the sentries looked this way. He was just going for a walk to loosen his bones and wanted to be alone. If he wasn't back in a half hour, we agreed to go back to our bedrolls, and he'd get back to the barrel by and by. He shook my hand and said he was most grateful to me. A half hour came and went without him. The next evening, I was surprised to hear that Hernani deserted. I figured he wanted to be a real Hernani himself. I hoped he'd forget the horn part. In Anik's agonies, a few weeks previous, I pitied the 800 farm boys, skin and bone feverish, and left behind our glorious march. But now, after that glorious march along the Timaeus Range, down where Timmy's promontory stretched far into the Mare Frigoris, or Cold Sea, now I envied them. I worked like a mule. I chopped dirt and sand while Old Glory snapped on top our earthworks. All them pretty Lunaritas staring at us from the Plaza of Pluto just across the Cold Sea made me sweat worst of all. I longed to unbraid their long dark hair, but my fingers were calloused and dirty from my shovel, which helped heap up the walls of a fort, the cannon of which aimed straight at them. And had I not lifted up my hand and sworn an oath to my constitution and my president? So here I was. Besides, I had my eye on one of them camp girls, Sarah, same as 500 other men. "Say, Kelly," I asked, leaning on my shovel, Just why do the Army of Observation need a fort to do its observating? I figure we can do it easy from an observation balloon. We need to lend argument to the border as determined by Mr. Polk in the Cartographers of the Democratic Party, speechified Kelly, taking the words from a Penny Press editorial. Oh, to heck with Slowpoke, said me. Kelly, lend a hand with this boulder. Kelly was a little too slow to help me, I thought. Come on there, Lieutenant. Why, you think you're a Bo Bremer with that 15 cents of gold braid. Kelly gave me a kick in the pants first, then helped me carry the rock to a wheelbarrow. Then he pulled out his Walter Scott and studied the science of glory, his lips moving. I was sunburnt, the sweat stinging my eyes, with scratches on my arms that might any minute swell up proud with gangrene. Yes, and I was half mad from drinking briny spring water under that relentless Baptist hellfire heat. The coldness of the cold sea left much to be desired. I licked my lips until they bled. Soon my tongue was parched like a hunk of leather left out in the sun. My toe blisters grew blisters of their own that festered, so I couldn't outrun that cloud of flies buzzing lovingly around my head. My back ached from shoveling, and I felt so tired I thought I would drop and add my corpse to the redoubt wall. It was hard to sleep with scorpions, snakes, bandidos, lunaritas, and Sarahs crawling all over my dreams at night. However, I took solace in the fact that it was all for glory, which was, I guessed, about to begin at any moment. We heard a lot about Valley Forge from the officers. Everything on the moon, I mean the peninsula of Texas, bit, poisoned, and cut. Even the plants looked like rocks and scorpions, strange bloated nettles. I longed for the soft pines and sweet-smelling dogwood of Maryland. Here, on the P of T, cactus barbs and mesquite thorns tore at my trousers below the knee. Let me tell you, cactus and mesquite are poor usurpers to the cool brethren of pine. Show me a pine cone pillow and a bed of sweet brown needles, and I will give you sweet dreams and a clear conscience. We were already a ragged, sorry lot of regulars, true summer heirs of the Winter Valley Forge. Having fallen into the forge fire, I suppose, my blue sleeve split all along the seam, and that little rent was a sorry testament to the patriotism of the contractors. No, neighbor, I did not doubt the campaign, which I was certain would prove, before Christmas, a glorious one. No, I blamed those perfidious New England manufacturers, every one of them a Hartford conventioner, who'd rather secede the glorious Union than lose an ill-gotten profit with Martian mooners. I mean the John Bulls of Great Deimos. So I durn the Yankees, dang the Tammany Hall barons, I cursed the Tory lovers, and kicked the next boulder right where it resembled Kelly's chin. I strangled the Wall Street swanks, squatting down and getting hold of a big rock. I gritted my teeth at the Whigs and their tiresome nagging as I lifted the boulder and then dropped it down on top of the abolitionist wheelbarrow. Lit abolitionists worked the plantations then, I thought. We soldiers are practically slaves anyway. Then I was hungry. It was regular fare again, biscuit, beans, and grits. I nourished my labor with some bovine-flavored water, and for lunch fried a crawdad from the Nation of Mud. We were all tired from this work. If I wanted to do this railroad work, complained Six Fingers, I'd wear my hair in a queue or play bagpipes. He was in a spleeny, wicked humor much of the time, being the only Mormon around. His sleeve had a red S on it, showing that he was special, an aristocrat. A sharpshooter, the best shot among us cotton balers. But what a burden, being an aristocrat. He had to carry a long, skinny rifle that was even heavier than the rest of us myopic noisemakers and bayonet holders. I won't call them muskets. They were Franklin sparklers, and that's about all. Old Zack put his trust in the bayonet electric charge, not in the volley. Yeah, I said, well, I might be loco, but glory's my motive. Back to work, doughboy, screamed Sergeant Mallory, who hated me because I hated him. It was he who made me a soldier back at Camp Greenhorn. Walking back to the shovels, I idly reached in my pocket and pulled out a note. It hadn't been there when I gave them to Sarah to fix and patch. I hoped the worst. Dear Jack, I just wanted to say you are cuter than a spotted puppy. Do you like me, Sarah? Thank you for listening. And forgive my imperfect reading for this free podcast. If you like the story, please pick up the novel on Kindle for 99 cents. Thank you very much.